Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 201 event, which takes place in Atlanta, Georgia. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we didn't have any premium bets for UFC on Fox 20, but we did give out one free bet, which was a one-unit play on Luis Henrique, who, in the first bout of the night, and Henrique won by second-round submission at plus 135 odds. Now back to the present, UFC 201 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 2, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass, we have a lightweight contest between Cesar Arzamendia, who is 7-3, taking on Damian Brown, who is 15-9. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Brown minus 130 to come back on Arzamendia minus 110. Right now, looking over at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. It's currently Brown minus 120. Arzamendia is at even money. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. And there is two reaction and a lot of split opinion coming in on this fight. And I understand it. I mean, both these guys are definitely flawed. They both have their issues as far as defensive skill set goes. Offensively, they have okay skill sets, though, and they can definitely be a challenge to one another here. So it's a good matchup, a competitive matchup, but I really believe that it's Brown's fight to win or lose, believe it or not, here. And the reason being, I mean, Arzamendia is a very talented fighter. In some ways, I shouldn't say he's a very talented fighter. Take that back. He's not a very talented fighter overall. He has some skill though on the feet. He definitely is a striking base fighter that takes the fight to the ground and capable of doing some decent work with his top game and even has some submissions go along with it. So the guy is a striker with the sub game and actually has more of his wins by sub than he does striking. But still, I think the best part of his game is definitely on the feet. He's aggressive. He attacks. He pushes a high pace. He comes forward. He's definitely dangerous as far as – because he throws so much into every strike he throws. And then honestly, his clinch game is pretty good as well. He has effective knees. He times them well. But as I mentioned before, there's some question marks behind him, and one of them is his chin. It's definitely suspect. I mean, if you look at his last fight against Polo Reyes, now, of course, Polo has a ton of power, so it's almost unfair because Polo could do this to a lot of people. But if you look closer, Arzamendia got rocked right away at the beginning of that fight, and he got rocked a few times throughout that fight. And then even before that, I mean, his defensively, he just showed some flaws. I mean, you could definitely, with his aggression, it leaves openings and you could definitely tag him and he gets rocked, wobbled a little bit. He also has, in my opinion, questionable cardio to go along with his questionable chin and also questionable heart. I mean, he's a type of fighter, I think, that you put a lot of pressure on him and make it a tough, grueling fight. He will wilt under that pressure. On the show, on The Ultimate Fighter, he is a tough Latin America 2, I believe, seasoned vet. But in that fight, he made it to the semis, or I should say in the fight that I'm talking about right now, it was a semifinal fight against Barzola. And Barzola was able to finish him in the first round with a solid body punch. Now, of course, he had some damage that he took before that, but he basically tapped to that body punch. And then on top of that, he comes into the UFC, makes his debut, and just got – he just quit basically. He got hit hard against Polo. I understand he took some punishment there and just wanted no part of the rest of that fight. So he does have a little bit of quit in him, and I think that's why I like Brown a little bit more than anything else, to be honest with you, in this fight. Brown is one of these savvy vets. He's been around for a long time. He finally got to make his UFC debut against Patrick, and he lost by a pretty clear unanimous decision, but he did show some signs of toughness in that fight and some potential. And actually he's getting better, honestly, throughout his career. You could see the improvements in his game as well. He's been on the regional circuit, and for a regional resume, I mean, fighting on Cage Warriors and fighting on some of the other circuits that he's, or organizations that he's fought in, he actually got at least, I think, better experience overall than Arzamendia. And he started putting together some wins. He started getting better defensively. His submission defense at times is questionable, but it has improved to the point where I think he's pretty savvy defensively on the ground. Offensively, I think his ground game is really solid. His wrestling is okay. He gets top position. Even if you put him on his back and he fights from the bottom, at times he can reverse and end up on top. I mean, he did it even to Patrick in that fight. So I think he's more than capable of doing that against a fighter like Arzamendia here in this spot as well. And then on the feet, he isn't really going to overwhelm you with the striking, but he does have enough power, I think, and especially with Arzamendia's aggressiveness, that he might be able to clip Arzamendia's chin there as well. So I just think that Brown's going to be the more steady fighter. He's going to be there at the end, where Arzamendia, I think, along the way, if he can't win this fight early, he's going to probably quit or get clipped or get knocked out. He's just not going to be there in a three-round war, and I do believe that Brown can win on the scorecards, and if he doesn't get caught early on, he probably will win this fight, probably inside as it goes. But if not, if it hits the scorecards, I think he wins there. So my pick is going to be Brown to pull off his first UFC career win.
And I'm going to come in on the other side. Damian Brown is a pretty solid overall ground fighter, but I kind of refer to him as more of an Anton Zafir than a Jake Matthews. Now, Cesar Arzamendia isn't a world beater, but he does have talent. He was the first pick on Team Latin America on the show for a reason. He's well-rounded, he has a good, solid Muay Thai base on the feet, and his ground game actually is relatively impressive. He picked up 3 takedowns in his UFC debut before getting knocked out. And realistically, the biggest problem that Arzamendia has is his chin, and maybe his heart once his chin gets clipped. But I don't think Damian Brown is that much of a threat on the feet. Now, Brown is a threat off of his back. He tosses up some Kimuras. Maybe he can work some sweeps. Mostly he's dangerous from top position. But for the most part, he's taken advantage of, you know, weaker Australian fighters, or even he has gone to Europe and fought in Cage Warriors as well. But I just think that Cesar Arzamendia is a little bit more well-rounded. And as long as Arzamendia can avoid being put on his back repeatedly, he should be in good shape here. I don't see Brown landing big bombs on the feet, and I can even see Arzamendia mixing in a few takedowns if he's really feeling it, maybe to seal some rounds. So I think Arzamendia pushes the pace in the stand-up, maybe lands some good knees and elbows in the clinch, and I think he can fluster Brown a little bit, but it wouldn't shock me to see Brown get some ground game going, but I think this is Arzamendia's fight to lose. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Ryan Benoit, who is 8-4, taking on Freddy Serrano, who is 3-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Serrano, I opened -140 to come back on Benoit at even money, and right now looking over 5 times, it is Serrano -125. Benoit is at +105, so line margins have tightened up. There is two-way action on this fight. A lot of split opinions out here as well. Interesting fight. I mean, Serrano, another Ultimate Fighter veteran. The guy's a beast. I mean, at age 36, it's unfortunate, because if he would have got into the sport a little bit earlier in his career, a little bit sooner at a younger age, I think the guy could definitely be a force at 125 pounds. I mean, he still could be at 36 years old. He's still very raw, only has a few fights on his resume, but he is a powerful, grinding wrestler that is improving on the feet all the time, getting a little bit more experience, getting more confidence. He can be dangerous on the feet, but it's his explosiveness, his slams, his ability to get the fight to the ground and do some damage there as well. That's pretty impressive. So Serrano is a very difficult out. He does have some question marks though still. I mean, obviously getting him into deep waters is a concern for him. I think he needs to be tested a little bit more. I mean, he just hasn't had that much experience in real MMA fights. I mean, and he is coming into the UFC. He's been doing okay thus far, but he is an interesting matchup here against Benoit. I mean, Benoit is taking this fight on short notice. He's replacing Borg. So obviously Borg would have been a more difficult matchup for Serrano than Benoit. But that being said, Benoit still really poses some interesting threats here for sure, because Benoit has some speed. He's got some power. He's got a well-rounded skill set of his own. I mean, he could strike on the feet. That's where he wins most of his fights, but he can grapple too. He could wrestle. He could scramble. He can win the fight by sub. There's a lot of good things to like about Benoit, and he even has proven in the past that even if he does slow down as the fight goes, which he does, he's still capable of winning fights late. I mean, if you look at the Pettis win that he has, which is by far the biggest win of his career, he was losing that fight and came back and ended up winning that fight with his power. So Benoit is not an easy win or an easy slouch type of victory for anybody. I mean, I think Serrano can definitely push the pace on him a little bit, probably control the tempo of this fight and grind him out, even maybe possibly finish Benoit as the fight goes. So I do give the slight edge to Serrano, but this is going to be a test. And I think it's a good test that Serrano really needs to show where he's at. So he should pass this test. I do think Serrano gets the W here, and I do think he's going to be an interesting guy at 125 for sure. And he's going to be a tough out for a lot of fighters. So I'm looking forward to this fight. It should be fun, but I do see Serrano winning it.
Now, for the most part, Ryan Benoit is an exciting fighter, but he's not exactly a successful fighter, especially in the UFC. I mean, he had a fight of the night type of scrap against Josh Sampo, UFC debut, but he lost almost every scramble on the ground and eventually got submitted. Second fight, Sergio Pettis, man, he was getting his ass kicked in that fight, got dominated in the first round. His eye was swelling up bad. He was losing the beginning of the second round. Joe Rogan was just lauding the praises of Sergio Pettis, and then he got caught, and Benoit landed a huge left hand and put him out. So then his last fight, he got exposed. Ben Wen just teed off on Benoit on the feet and then completely crushed him on the ground. So in all three of Benoit's fights so far in the UFC, he's been taken down, he's been in bad spots, and I don't think that changes here against Freddy Serrano, who might be the best wrestler he's faced yet. Serrano, while he's 36 years old, he is a very, very talented wrestler, and he does not fight like he's that old. He's only 3-0, so he doesn't have a ton of wear and tear in his body from training and competing in mixed martial arts for extended periods of time. He's still got that quickness, that explosion. He still has the quick reflexes. He has power in both hands and feet, and he has some really nasty takedowns. So looking at Serrano, I think that he is going to be in control of this fight, and as long as he doesn't get into any type of brawling exchanges with Benoit on the feet, then Serrano should be in good shape. If Serrano keeps his distance on the feet, he shouldn't have any major problems avoiding Benoit's big, powerful overhand rights and left hooks, because they're usually very telegraphed. So I think this is definitely Freddy Serrano's fight to lose. I think he can finish this on the ground. He might even be able to finish it on the feet, because he does pack some serious punch, and he might be quicker than Benoit. So my pick is going to be Freddy Serrano. Now moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims, we have a welterweight contest between Michael Graves, who is 6-0, and Bojan Velikovic, who is 14-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Graves at -175, a comeback on Velikovic at +135. Right now it's Graves -235, Velikovic is +195. So there has been more action on Graves. It is a true indicator of where the line is moving. I mean, there's been more bets coming in Graves' way, and I understand it a little bit. I mean, stylistically, if you look back at Velikovic's career, I mean, outside of the UFC, obviously, more so than anything else, he's had a pretty impressive resume. I mean, he definitely fought some decent competition along the way, but he struggled the most against guys that could put him on his back, can outgrind him, out wrestle him a little bit. And obviously that's exactly what Graves can do and what he's going to look to do in this fight against Velikovic. But overall, Velikovic is definitely a very talented fighter. I mean, in his debut win in the UFC, official debut win over at DeCherico, I mean, that was a good fight. It was a very tough test for him. DeCherico is a very good fighter as well. But before that, even coming into the UFC, I mean, he was tested again on the regional scene a little bit. And the guy has really excelled in all areas of the game. I mean, the guy has good stand-up skill. He's got good grappling skill. If you put him on his back, a lot of times he's able to scramble out, get top position, and he's a threat to attack on the ground as well. So he can win the fight by sub. His technical skill set on the feet is fun to watch. He can be effective with his striking. So the guy is just, even against the grinders, the difficult fights that he's had, he's made those competitive as well. So he is not an easy out for anybody, any stylistic type of matchup, and including Graves. So this is going to be a war. That's why I think a lot of people being that confident in Graves, I mean, it's kind of tough to say, because I think he's going to struggle a little bit more than everybody realizes. Graves is still kind of raw. I mean, he's developing his skill set, getting more confidence, especially with his UFC career thus far as well. He's been performing really well. I think he's been – one of his most impressive wins to me is actually over Luque. I know a lot of people might not give Luque enough credit, but now they're starting to come around to him a little bit. But his decision win over Luque was very impressive. Luque is a very tough out. So that tells you what kind of caliber fighter I think Graves can be. He can grind out fighters even like that has decent takedown defense, that has a very good skill set. And Velikovic is kind of in that same group, I think, as far as – a talented fighter that Graves can kind of push the pace on, control the tempo of the fight, and get the W here. But I'm just worried a little bit on the cards because I'm expecting it to be a very close competitive fight with Graves probably squeaking out a 29-28 type of decision. But the path to victory for Graves, make no mistake, is putting Velikovic on his back and grinding him out. And I think that's what he's going to be able to do to have somewhat success. But again, at the current line, I don't think it's a favorite or pass situation. I don't think it's more of a dog or pass situation at the current line, but I'd probably stay away as far as betting advice goes and see how this fight plays out, because both these guys, I think, have a bright future ahead. They're both young enough and they're going to keep on improving, and they're going to probably stick around the UFC for a while. So the winner of this fight is going to take a big step forward. I think it's probably going to be Graves.
Yeah, I really like Michael Graves here. Not only has he picked up two quick wins in the UFC, he's done it against good fighters. Randy Brown is a similar fighter to Bojan Velikovic, and Vicente Luque is a very talented fighter that has gone on and smashed his last couple opponents. So Graves is not beating slouches to kick off his UFC career, and Bojan is definitely not a slouch either. But that being said, Velikovic does find himself on his back when he faces wrestlers repeatedly. Now, he makes those fights interesting because he's active off of his back and he fights back hard. He's throwing strikes, elbows, submission attempts, you name it. But he still is on his back. So what I see happening here is Michael Graves being absolutely tenacious with his takedown attempts, looking to close the distance repeatedly and then eventually getting the takedown. Now, it might not happen right away, but you just look at Graves' last fight against Randy Brown, where he had a little bit of trouble in the first couple minutes getting takedowns because Brown was sprawled out along the fence. He was defending well, but Graves just kept at it, wore him down, and then eventually turned the corner, got the takedown, and then from there on out, he just wore his opponent down and ended up getting a second round submission. Now, I can't promise that Graves is going to get a finish here, but I really do think that he just gets in Velikovic's grill and continues tenaciously and aggressively and stubbornly looking for the takedown until he gets it. Now, Velikovic, if he's able to keep this fight standing and probably a little bit more at kickboxing range or even in the pocket, then Velikovic can do some damage. But I just don't see Graves giving him that space. I just think he gets right in his face and keeps working for takedowns until he gets them, and it's going to be a very frustrating long night for Velikovic, because I expect Michael Graves to pick up a lot of takedowns, have a lot of top position, work some ground and pound, and probably win a decision. So my pick is going to be Michael Graves. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 2 prelims, we have a flyweight contest between Wilson Hayes, who is 20-6, and Hector Sandoval, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Hayes -315 to come back on Sandoval at +235. And right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is Hayes -320 to come back on Sandoval is +260. What an interesting matchup. I mean, Hayes goes from fighting for the title at 125, getting his opportunity at gold, to fighting a guy that's coming into the UFC making his debut on short notice. What a change. And Hayes deserves to get a shot at the gold. I understand he was a big underdog coming into the fight, and he probably wasn't going to dethrone the champ, Demetrius Johnson, of course. But still, throughout the career that he's had, the opponents that he's faced, I was at least glad to see him get a shot at gold in the UFC. Now, that being said, he's got a tough fight on his hands here. I mean, Hayes is definitely improving his game, even at his age. I mean, he's 31 years old, but again, MMA years, he's way beyond that. But he's still improving his game. He's getting better on the feet, getting a little bit more confidence in the feet. Of course, the best attribute of his game is his grappling ability, his takedown game, his scrambling ability, his submission ability. It's a thing of beauty to watch when he does compete. I mean, Hayes is legitimately one of the best in the world for a reason, and he's been at the top of the ladder for a while for a reason as well. I mean, he's that good. So it's hard to match up with Hayes. If you're not going to sprawl and brawl and kind of catch him and knock him out, you're probably not going to beat Hayes. Sandoval now does have that kind of fight in him because he does have a wrestling background and he is an explosive, talented athlete. I mean, he's short, powerful, athletic with a well-rounded skill set, really. His striking game is very solid. He mixes up his attack really well, has speed to go along with good power. And one thing that he does that a lot of fighters don't really look to do, he's not just a headhunter. He digs the body really well. And it's very effective at times too, because he can sap a lot of energy by digging to those body shots and really just kind of being unorthodox with the way he goes about his striking, especially with his aggression and his kind of wild attack at times. So he is training at Alpha Male. He's facing a lot of talented fighters in the lighter divisions, as we know, at flyweight, at bantamweight, at featherweight. So he has good training partners to prepare him for what he's going to face against Hayes, even though it's a different matchup than most people that he trains with slightly because of Hayes' pure BJJ and the way he goes about his grappling is still a good place to be in a fight like this, making your UFC debut. So Sandoval's game, and I wouldn't be surprised at all with his explosive, if he is able to sprawl and brawl and maybe even catch Hayes and knock him out. I mean, that would be kind of a sad scenario considering Hayes was fighting for the title, but Sandoval could very well be a live dog here in this spot, but it's hard to pick him in this spot as well, because I think if it does hit the scorecards, Hayes probably wins on the cards. And then if it doesn't, even if not, I think if there's a lot of ground battle here, you got to give the edge to Hayes there as well. I mean, because his BJJ is so smooth, he'll probably control at least the grappling. If not, maybe get the sub along the way as well. So Hayes has more ways to win this fight. He has the full training cap. He was training to face the champion right now, so he should be more prepared to face Sandoval than vice versa. So I got to lean with Hayes a little bit, but as far as a bet goes, I would definitely stay away from this fight. It's a dog or pass situation completely. There's no way you can lay really 3-1 on Hayes, but I do think he's going to probably win this fight.
Don't sleep on Hector Sandoval. He's definitely a very dangerous fighter. He trains out of Team Alpha Male. He has a lot of power in his hands and more of a wrestling-centric approach to his game. The problem is, I would say 90% of Sandoval's offense plays right into Wilson Hayes' style. What Sandoval usually likes to do is he presses the action on the feet, wings some big, powerful haymaker-type punches to close the distance. Then once he gets a hold of his opponent, then he works for takedowns and then starts either beating the crap out of his opponents from top position or working for submissions. And the only part of that game that is going to potentially work against Wilson Hayes is the winging haymakers, because Hayes' chin is definitely a bit suspect at this point. He was knocked out twice near the end of his career in Bellator, and then he has been hurt and rocked multiple times in his UFC career, since dropping down to flyweight, especially against Joby Sanchez, and then more recently against Jussier Formiga. So I definitely do think that if Sandoval connects with one of those big bombs he likes to throw to close the distance, it could be a game changer. But that being said, Wilson Hayes, he earned that title shot by absolutely styling on Dustin Ortiz. I mean, Ortiz didn't win hardly 1 second of that bout. It was just constant pressure from Hayes, big takedowns, dominant top position, and he even controlled the stand-up. I mean, he looked amazing. He looked like a title contender in that fight. And that's why he earned it, even though that was just a one-fight winning streak after the tough loss to Formiga. So if that version of Wilson Hayes shows up, Hector Sandoval is going to be in big, big trouble, because that's just not the type of fighter you want to make your UFC debut against. But maybe if Hayes doesn't take his opponent seriously because it's a huge step down from Demetrius Johnson, then and if Hector Sandoval connects with one of those game-changer punches, then maybe Sandoval can pull this off. But I think it's an extreme long shot, so I'm definitely siding with Wilson Hayes to pull this one out. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Anthony Hamilton, who is 14-5, taking on Damian Grabowski, who is 20-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Hamilton -130, the comeback on Grabowski -110. Looking over at five dimes right now, it's Hamilton -130, the comeback on Grabowski is +110. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and line staying the same. They are getting two-way action on this fight. This is a tough one to me because, man, I tell you what, both these guys have their flaws, and it's pretty obvious to me in a lot of ways that they need a lot of work. I mean, they're big boys. They got a lot of power. As far as respect factor goes, I think it's Hamilton that gets disrespected overall from the MMA community a little bit more. So Grabowski is going to have a little bit more hype, a little bit more respect, I think, from the MMA community, probably the betters as well. I'm actually surprised the line hasn't flipped to Grabowski being a favorite. I was kind of expecting it to do that, and it still might. By the time we hit fight day or fight time, you could see Grabowski being a slight favorite. I wouldn't be shocked at all with Hamilton coming in as the underdog, but I don't know if that's necessarily right. I mean, skill-wise, you can't compare the two. I think Grabowski is the more talented fighter of the two overall. On the feet, it is definitely close. Now, I'm saying that because Grabowski, I think you could trust him a little bit more. I think his chin is a little bit better than Hamilton's, although defensively he does get tagged and he can be knocked out. But I still think Hamilton is definitely worse in the chin department. And that's the area that concerns me the most, honestly, in this whole fight with Hamilton. Now, Subdi, of course, will come into play, but I think it's still his chin in this spot that you got to be concerned about. But with that being said, Grabowski, again, is the more technical fighter overall. He's got the better grappling game. He's dangerous from the top position especially, but even off his back. I mean, the guy does some pretty neat things. I mean, he's able to attack and sweep and get some Kimuras off his back. He's got really good chokes. So the guy definitely has a well-put-together game. But the problem with me for Grabowski is if supporting him, he's just too easy to take down at times. And Hamilton is going to do exactly that. He's going to come in looking to take this fight to the floor and just kind of smother and grind out Grabowski. He needs to be careful though, because he knows Grabowski's dangerous on the ground. But I mean, that's going to be Hamilton's game plan. I think he's going to have success doing so. So that's why I'm honestly leaning a little bit more towards Hamilton. Hamilton does have a little bit of power, underrated power on the feet as well. He's got obviously a little bit of length, that's going to probably give Grabowski a little bit of problems. But overall, again, I wish Hamilton wouldn't stand up and bang too much since I'm picking him, of course, because I think he can get clipped and I don't trust his chin at all. But I think if he implements the right game plan, he is coming from a great camp in Greg Jackson's camp. You know, he's going to be prepared. He's going to be ready to implement that game plan, getting those takedowns and kind of grounding Grabowski out, getting maybe superior position and maybe ending it on the ground with strikes as well. So I think that's kind of more likely how this fight plays out. Again, Grabowski's just too willing to get put on his back, and Hamilton is going to love it, really. I mean, that's exactly what he wants to do. So I think stylistically, that's what makes this a pretty good fight for Hamilton, and that's why I'm going to pick him. Now, again, I am concerned either way because these guys are definitely flawed. I can see Hamilton getting knocked out. I could even see him maybe sticking his neck in something he shouldn't be, you know, getting caught up in, or even maybe Grabowski gets that Kimura. But overall, I think more than anything else, Hamilton probably grinds out a decision win or maybe a late stoppage over Grabowski as well. So I'm going to pick him to win.
My primary issue with Anthony Hamilton is he is just so kind of lumbering and slow that you really, the only people that he does get the big takedowns against are people that have zero idea what footwork is. Yeah. People like Daniel Omelinchuk, who for some reason just backs straight up into the fence whenever somebody puts pressure on him, or Ruan Potts, who thank God is no longer in the UFC anymore because they kind of ran out of guys to feed him to. And I just don't think Anthony Hamilton is going to have a really easy chance to take Grabowski down because he is so slow. Now Grabowski isn't a world beater on the feet. He's strong. He has a decent reach. He knows what he's doing on the feet. That's not his strength. His forte is definitely the ground, where he has a decent guard and is pretty dangerous if he can get top position. Now, Grabowski's wrestling is not as good as Hamilton, so if they're trading takedown for takedown, Hamilton will probably get the better of him. But I think Grabowski can use that speed to land some big shots on the feet, potentially. I definitely can see Hamilton's chin getting tested in this fight. And on the ground, if and when it does go there, I would not be shocked to see Grabowski pull off a submission, whether it's off of his back, whether maybe he sweeps Hamilton, who is not exactly a big threat to do damage from top position. He kind of just stays there, and the only person he ever really hurt from top position was Ruben Potts, and Grabowski is definitely no Ruben Potts. Now, Grabowski did get beat up on the ground in his last fight, but that was Derek Lewis. That guy is absolutely devastating from top position. That's not Anthony Hamilton. So if Grabowski is put on his back here, I think that he's going to have a lot more opportunities to pull off a submission, to get a sweep, get a reversal, maybe get back to his feet. I just don't see Anthony Hamilton utilizing his wrestling and laying on Grabowski for 2 to 3 rounds. I think at some point Grabowski can pull something off here. I think he's too athletic and too dangerous for Hamilton to control. So my pick is going to be Damian Grabowski. Now dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Ross Pearson, who is 21-11 with a 1-0 contest, taking on Jorge Masvidal, who is 29-11. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Masvidal, minus 260. The comeback on Pearson at plus 180. Right now, it looks like it is currently Masvidal minus 230, plus 190 on Pearson. So another spot where the line margins have tightened up, and it's basically staying steady. It's a tough fight. I mean, for both guys again here, because Pearson always steps up as an underdog. And I mean, he comes through and delivers a better fight than anybody expects. He did it again recently against Will Brooks. Now, it's a quick turnaround. He wanted to get back in there. Of course, he doesn't have to make that weight cut this time. This fight is at 170 where Masvidal has been fighting at. So not bad. I mean, both fighters are probably obviously going to be happy that they don't have to make that drastic cut to 155, but this should be another barn burner, another great fight. I mean, you got to respect Pearson. Again, as a dog, if you look traditionally, the guy has stepped it up and made it a very tough fight. He's pulled off some upsets, but more than that, I mean, he's, again, even when he's lost, he's hung in there and performed relatively well. This fight is a tough one though, because he's facing a very well-rounded fighter in Masvidal. I mean, Pearson is your typical, not typical. I mean, he's better than that, especially with his experience, but he's your striking-based fighter. He's got speed, power on the feet. He's a very intelligent fighter. Defensively, he's actually not bad. I know he's been knocked out a few times in his career. That's more of his chin, but defensively, he's not bad. He's a smart fighter. He even has some solid takedown defense in most cases. Again, he kind of showed that even though he was controlled by Brooks, he did better in that takedown department than a lot of people give him credit for. I think the last really bad spot, I mean, Dunham actually performed a little bit better in that area than Brooks. Again, different styles make fights and whatnot. And typically that's the fighter that gives Pearson a lot of problems, is the guy that can kind of control him, push him up against the cage, get some takedowns, get his back, that type of thing right there, or that finds his chin. Now, Masvidal can kind of do both. I mean, that's the thing here. Masvidal is a great striker. He's going to have some length, reach over Pearson on the feet. He is a very accurate striker. He's got power. He's got that killer instinct. So on the feet, it's going to be a dangerous fight for Pearson. And then not just that. I mean, Masvidal can pull this fight to the ground. He's got that length and the grappling ability to kind of do, I think, a little bit of what Dunham did and repeat some of that performance as well. So this is just a difficult matchup for Pearson to win, really. But I think he is going to be game. I think the turnaround isn't going to be that bad because he didn't take a lot of abuse. And I think actually he's going to be almost in better fight shape. And it's kind of going to do him good getting right back in there. And a lot of times I don't like the quick turnarounds, but in this case, I can understand. And I don't think it's going to be that much of an impact, to be honest with you, negatively at least. We'll see, though. Could be wrong. But overall, I got to pick Masvidal. He's just the more complete fighter of the two. I think if he hits the scorecards, we will probably see a fairly competitive fight. And man, Masvidal sometimes gets ripped off on the card. So be careful here betting this fight. But if it is inside, it's probably going to be Masvidal, maybe catching Pearson's chin. Or even though he's only got a couple submissions on his resume, I mean, Masvidal has sneaky good submission game. It's better than really his record indicates. So wouldn't be shocking to see him do something like that either. But overall, I think it's Masvidal probably on the cards, but maybe by KO or TKO as it goes as well. So my pick is Masvidal to win.
I really like Jorge Masvidal here. I mean, Ross Pearson taking this fight on short notice. I mean, he literally just fought a couple weeks ago, and he's coming around and taking on Masvidal. And maybe it's just out of frustration because he thought he could do better against Will Brooks. It was a fight where maybe if he had performed at a higher level, he could have pulled it off. But I think this is a poor decision rushing into a welterweight contest against somebody in Jorge Masvidal who really has started to come into his own a little bit since moving up to the welterweight division. Now, he hasn't had quite the results, but Masvidal looks better. I'm sure he is performing better. And against somebody like Ross Pearson, I think this is right into Masvidal's wheelhouse. Masvidal is a terrific counter striker. He really looks for counter hooks, counter knees, you name it, counter it. And Ross Pearson has an aggressive style where he puts some pressure on his opponents. And I think that's going to play right into Masvidal's game. Masvidal is going to look for opportunities to catch Pearson while he's overcommitting to strikes, and they are going to be there. And Pearson has a chin that, while it's not terrible, if you connect with a shot that he doesn't see coming, he's definitely going to be in trouble. And with Masvidal's other parts of his game, Nick mentioned the underrated submission game. He has a very underrated wrestling game too. So if Pearson actually is getting something going on the feet, I can see Masvidal mixing it up and throwing in some wrestling too. So I just think that unless Pearson fights the perfect game plan and Masvidal's counters are just not working and his takedowns aren't working, I just don't see it. So I think Jorge Masvidal wins convincingly, although you never know what the judges in Masvidal because of his countering style. Sometimes they prefer the guy that moves forward, but I think Masvidal is going to be so effective with his countering that he should be able to coast to a decision. So my pick is going to be Jorge Masvidal. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a light heavyweight contest between Nikita Krylov, who is 20-4, and Ed Herman, who is 24-11 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Krylov minus 210 to come back on Herman at plus 160, and early action was all over Herman. It dropped all the way down, I believe, to $1.50 or so on average, give or take a few cents there, and now it's climbing back up. It's currently at five dimes, minus 170 for Krylov. The comeback on Herman is plus 150. So basically a 10-cent drop in the dog price overall, and line margins have tightened up again. And now obviously there is two-way action coming in because the bouncing up and down a little bit of this line. It is a true indicator of the way the action went thus far. A tough fight. I mean, you would think it's a tough fight because skill set for skill set, Herman is the better fighter. He's got the more experience. He's been in there with the best of the best for sure throughout his UFC career. I mean, he's had a lot of great fights, but he's been around for so long. He's 35 years old, and in fight years, he's way beyond that. And you know, and it's unfortunate because I think we're still seeing some good stuff out of Herman, and especially him moving up to 205 seems to be a good move for him. I mean, he ended up beating Bosch in his last fight, and he was impressive there for sure. And that was a quality win, considering Broach still, I mean, dropped back down to 185 and had that win there, recently as well. So it doesn't look that bad for Herman right now. So he's kind of back on track with a win here, and he is capable of outskilling Krylov overall because Herman has some striking on the feet. He's got the dirty boxing. He's got the clinch game. He's a tough guy. I mean, overall, he showed a pretty good chin throughout his career. Now at 35 and the punishment he's absorbed, I don't really trust that chin that much anymore, to be honest with you. But overall, Herman has the type of game that if it hits the ground, he is very dangerous. I mean, especially from top position, but of course, even from his back, he'll attack with submissions and he's capable of finishing fights. So Herman is the better, more complete fighter, more evolved fighter at this time. But Krylov is the young gun coming in, and he's improving. I mean, fight by fight, you can really see Krylov getting a little bit more confidence. He's only 24 years old here. I mean, 205 seems to be the right weight class for him. Of course, he made his UFC debut at heavyweight against Soa Palelei, believe it or not. And he actually was doing good in that fight before he kind of gassed out there, and just so big for him. So dropping down to 205 definitely was the right move, and he's been working hard, and you could really tell. I mean, on the feet, Krylov is very sneaky good. I mean, he's got that kind of skill that he can end the fight with his hands or his feet. He's got good knockout power, good accuracy, good speed, aggression, everything you like to see. He's developing a little bit of a wrestling game and a ground game to go along with it, especially offensively. He's capable of finishing the fight by sub. Now, defensively, again, his submission game, defensively, you got to be a little bit concerned about, especially with a guy that's underrated in that department like Herman. But overall, I think Krylov is going to be the fresher fighter here. He's going to be the quicker fighter here. I think he's going to be the more dangerous fighter here. And I think at this point of his career, it's not a great matchup for Herman. So I mean, I opened at 210. I thought it was a fair number there. I can understand the respect that Herman's getting at the betting window, but I do understand the more recent action here with Krylov as well. And I do think that's probably the right way. I just think that Krylov's speed, power, athleticism at this point is going to be a little bit too much. And unfortunately for Herman, I think he's probably going to get caught and knocked out again. And then we'll see what happens to him and if he continues to fight or not. But I think that's basically how it plays out here. So Krylov probably by TKO, I think, and it is going to be another impressive notch on his resume, and he's going to keep on taking some steps forward, which is good to see. So I'm curious to see where Krylov ends up and how good he can get, because obviously he still has some flaws and he's got a long way to go. But right now, this would be a huge win for him.
I definitely feel this is a very winnable fight for Nikita Krylov. Now, Ed Herman just moved up to the light heavyweight division, and while he did have success in his first fight was against Tim Boach, a fellow middleweight who was just moving up to the light heavyweight division for kicks. Now he's facing an actual light heavyweight, somebody that has fought at heavyweight before in Krylov. Now, Krylov, while he's not the most technical guy, and he still has a ways to go before he becomes, you know, a serious, like, contender-type threat in the light heavyweight division, he is perhaps the most opportunistic fighter in the whole division. Whether it's taking advantage of things that he caused, like a headbutt against Barroso, which set up a submission, or a fence grab against De Lima, which set up a submission, or just other crazy wonky opportunities, he does find those openings, and then he takes advantage of them. He has pretty good knockout power in both hands and his feet. His kicks are pretty dangerous. And while his ground game is not great, it's still effective, and he pushes a pretty high pace that most light heavyweights can't keep up with. If they try to hang with him for the first round and they start to slow down, he will smell that blood and then just go for it. And I think Ed Herman is going to be biting off a little bit more than he can chew here. Now, Herman does have some power. Herman has some ability on the ground. He has some pretty good leg locks. Herman could connect with something real solid on the feet. But for the most part, Krylov is just younger, bigger, stronger, longer. So I favor Krylov. I think at some point he takes advantage of an opening Herman gives him and then pulls off a finish. So my pick is going to be Nikita Krylov. Now, moving on to the pay-per-view main card, we have a flyweight contest between Ian McCall, who is 13-5-1, and Justin Scoggins, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I have been Scoggins -170, the comeback on McCall at +130. And this one, I was a little bit surprised which way the public would go, or the general bettors would come in early on, I should say. And it was towards Scoggins, and I was a little disappointed. This line shot up almost to 300 at one point. Now it's back down to -245, -230s out there across the screen. And at five dimes to be exactly, it's -245. The comeback on McCall is +205. So needless to say, early action did come in on Scoggins, and now they're starting to get some money back on McCall, which is good. I mean, that's exactly what you want, especially in a fight like this. I mean, what more can you say? It's basically, in my opinion, it's another young gun in Scoggins. I mean, we were just talking about it with Krylov and Herman, but obviously in a different way, because these two fighters are really well matched. And you're talking about two guys that have a ton of skill set here as well, especially for the 125 pound division. These guys are title contenders, where obviously in the last fight, we were talking about Krylov and Herman. They are not quite there yet. And kind of have a long way to go, but these guys are right in the mix, and a win here could really propel one of these guys to get a shot back at Demetrius Johnson. Especially, I know McCall's faced him, they got their little rivalry there, so maybe McCall would need to win another fight or something, but Scoggins gets his W here, it really launches him into that title picture for sure. And I think it's a real possibility he does do that. McCall, again, is kind of the older vet. He's a very well-rounded veteran. The guy has potential and skill in all areas. He's got a good stand-up game. He could be effective with his speed, with his movement, with his timing. He's got power and pop on his feet as well. And then, of course, he's got wrestling to go along with it. He can control the fight typically against most opponents. He can get top position. He has a good sub game to go along with it. So he's a very complete fighter. That's why he got to where he is and is recognized as one of the best flyweights in the world and has gotten respect throughout his MMA career. But 32 years old, taken a lot of punishment throughout his career. And now he's fighting kind of again, as I just mentioned, the young gun, in Scoggins, which Scoggins has been nothing but impressive to me. I mean, the improvement, let's face it, he's basically a karate kickboxing type stylist that has made it work in the MMA and the octagon in the UFC. And we haven't seen a lot of that. Of course, Thompson, we're starting to see more and more of these fighters actually implement their karate style and have success with it, but they adapt. They become more mixed martial artists. So Scoggins is more than just a karate stylist or, you know, a striker. Right now we're seeing a lot of his wrestling game come into play, and it's very effective. I mean, the guy has become quite a good wrestler. He gets top position more times than not. His ability to scramble has been very impressive. I mean, if you look at Scoggins' win over Ray Borg, Ray Borg is one of the best grapplers in 125, and his ability to stay out of trouble, stay in control of that fight against the guy that's his game is Ray Borg on the ground, it was just a huge improvement. I mean, outside of the Moraga fight where he got caught in that choke, and Moraga, I mean, he gets that grip on you with his technique. It's hard for anybody to get out. I mean, he did make a mistake there. I think fight IQ kind of came into play. He was still raw. He's getting a little bit better, and we're seeing the maturity of Scoggins really come into play here. Before that, his decision loss to Ortiz, honestly, he shouldn't have lost that fight. I thought Scoggins won that fight. It was close. It was competitive, but he should have won that fight. So through the UFC, really, Moraga has been his spot, getting caught in that choke. That's been really his only blemish, in my opinion. So, and he continues to get better and better. So his fight with McCall here is really going to show a lot. And I think I just find a hard time to believe or find a way for McCall to win this fight. He's not going to beat Scoggins on the feet. I don't think he's going to out-wrestle Scoggins either, because I think Scoggins' takedown defense is good enough that he might actually get top position in this fight, as crazy as that sounds. So really, outside of a lucky punch or maybe catching a sub, again, guillotine or something like that against Scoggins, I really don't see McCall winning this fight. If it hits the scorecards, which it probably does, it should be fairly competitive. I understand that as well, but I think Scoggins outpoints McCall. He's just the better striker here. I think he is the better mixed martial artist right now. I mean, overall, throughout his career, of course, it's McCall. But I think Scoggins is just on the rise, and McCall could be hitting that decline spot with all the fights and experience he has. So hard not to pick Scoggins here. If this line does dip below 200 again, it'd be hard to stay off it, to be honest with you. I think that's how much confidence I do have in Scoggins winning this fight. But where it's at right now, above 200, it's kind of to that point right now. I would probably stay away, because we got to give McCall a little bit of respect. So my opinion, Scoggins wins this fight. Scoggins wins, and he does it impressively, and he probably earns a title shot, or at least close to one, after this fight.
Yeah, Ian McCall, Justin Scoggins, if this fight had taken place maybe 2 years ago, McCall would probably be the favorite and would be in a good position, but McCall hasn't fought for a year, over a year and a half, and I'm just not quite convinced that MMA is his first priority anymore. I mean, he's got a kid back home. He's got a marijuana dispensary he's trying to work on. He's got all kinds of side projects. I mean, he's the kind of guy that, you know, just burns the candle at both ends. And obviously we know some of his crazy stories from before his UFC days. But, man, I just don't think Ian McCall can hang with a young up-and-comer like Justin Scoggins at this point. McCall just kind of has this tendency to sometimes throw the game plan out the window and just go for it. And that worked terribly in his last fight. I mean, he got takedowns against John Lineker and put him on his back and was looking good, and then kind of just abandoned the game plan and slugged it out with Lineker. He went for a couple takedowns along the way, but by the time he'd already been blasted in the face multiple times, he wasn't able to get those takedowns off, and ended up losing a one-sided decision by the end of it. So against Justin Scoggins, McCall really is going to have to be careful. He has solid offensive wrestling, and he needs to use it, because his stand-up is not effective against really talented strikers, and Scoggins is a talented striker. Scoggins is going to be kicking the crap out of McCall if this fight stays in striking range for the three rounds. If it goes to the ground, McCall has a chance, because his offensive wrestling is pretty good, although he could lose wrestling scrambles to Scoggins as well. Scoggins has a very underrated ground game. He's primarily used his ground game in his first five UFC fights. So he's definitely more than prepared enough to see what McCall has to offer on the canvas. Now, McCall doesn't really offer a whole bunch of submissions. For the most part, he looks for takedowns, and then he likes to beat you up. And if Scoggins can avoid that, then he's going to be in really good shape. Scoggins has extremely dynamic kicks, and he is quick, he is elusive, and against opponents that cannot dictate where the fight is going to be, like his last fight against Ray Borg, he can really take over. I can even see Scoggins shooting in for a couple takedowns here against McCall if he really starts getting things going on the feet and then wants to mix things up a little bit. So I just think time is starting to pass McCall by a little bit. I don't know what his motivation is, and I think Scoggins has a lot to prove here, and I think he's going to. So my pick is going to be Justin Scoggins. Now moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Francisco Rivera, who is 11-6 with one no contest, taking on Eric Perez, who is 15-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Rivera, minus 135, the comeback on Perez at minus 105. And currently, right now, over five dimes, it is minus 130 for Perez, and the comeback on Rivera is plus 110. So basically, it flipped a little bit, and it will continue to kind of go back and forth. It's one of those lines that, again, I wouldn't be surprised if it goes either way here. It's a true pick'em with a slight lean towards Perez now, and I do think it's actually more accurate than my opener of Rivera minus 135. Mainly because I figured, honestly, I mean, Rivera gets the respect, again, usually from the bettors, from the MMA community a little bit more. So I know Perez was that man for some time, but it seems like, I don't know, his hype has faded a little bit, and Rivera's is still alive. I mean, and a lot of that's to do with how much punching power Rivera really does have. It's tremendous. I mean, he's a tough out because of that. But not just that, he's improving. He's getting more experience, obviously, in the UFC as well. And he's just still turning some heads. But this fight, obviously, a lot of people do believe that Perez is a difficult matchup for Rivera. I'm one of them as well. Now, there is going to be two-way action, two-way support coming out of this fight. A lot of split opinions on this fight as well. But I do think that Perez is just the more talented of the two fighters. I know that Rivera was in a tough, hard-fought battle with Pickett. He performed okay, but Pickett came in with a win. A lot of people were kind of counting Pickett out in that spot there, so it was a pretty solid win for Pickett. But I think Perez is one of those fighters that is going to be obviously a little bit fresher than Pickett, and he can implement a lot of the same tools that Pickett used to win this fight as well. I think Perez is a little bit better underground than Rivera. He can get top position in this fight. I think he's the more dangerous of the two as far as submissions go. He's going to be threatening for subs. I think if it does stay upright, though, as well, it'll be a firefight. And, of course, Perez has been rocked. He has looked a little bit iffy defensively at times, and Rivera can do some damage that way. So Perez has to be cautious on the feet. But overall, I think if it turns into a slugfest, I could see Perez actually knocking Rivera out on the feet. I could see Perez actually taking this fight to the ground, having success on the ground. I could see Perez actually submitting him and winning the fight on the ground that way as well. And I could see it hitting the scorecards and it being a 29-28 type of decision win for Perez. So he has more ways to win it. I think really Rivera's best chance to win this fight is really clipping Perez, doing what he does best and knocking him out and winning the fight that way. Of course, if it hits the scorecards, I could see it being close. And who knows? I mean, we have so many bad decisions out there these days that you never know which way judges are going to go. But basically, I think that's kind of – maybe I'm being a little unfair, but I think that's realistically the only way Rivera beats this or wins this fight over Perez. I think Perez is just the better fighter, and he's probably going to come through here. So my pick is going to be Perez to defeat Rivera.
It's just all going to come down to the well-roundedness of Perez's game. Now, Francisco Rivera in a stand-up slugfest is always going to have a shot. I mean, the guy has insane power. He swings from the hip. And if he connects, Perez could be in trouble. I mean, Perez did get hurt by Taylor Lapolis in his last fight. But he responded wisely, decided to switch things up, went for takedowns, and then just took the fight over. So if Perez is smart here, he doesn't screw around with Francisco Rivera for long on the feet. He wants to get this fight to the floor. And honestly, Perez made a name for himself in the UFC at first by showcasing his ground game. He has a very diverse submission attack, a very aggressive ground game. And if he can get that going against Rivera, he should be in great shape. He just has to avoid making a major mistake on the feet and getting caught. And if he does that, he should be fine. I mean, Brad Pickett got rocked by Rivera, but was able to mix in enough takedowns and aggression and turn things around that he was able to win a decision against Rivera. So I think a younger version of Brad Pickett, a younger, bigger, stronger version should be just fine. Just avoid getting knocked out and he should be okay. So my pick is going to be Eric Perez. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Matt Brown, who is 22-14, taking on Jake Ellenberger, who is 30-11. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Brown -350, the comeback on Ellenberger at +250. Right now it's Brown -325, comeback on Ellenberger is +265. Now early on there was action coming in on Ellenberger, the line dropped a little bit, and now as we get closer to fight time there is action coming back in on Brown, a lot of parlay action I'm sure as well. So two-way action on this fight, even though it's a significant line, it's a decent favorite line for Brown over Ellenberger. And a couple years back, again, as we were mentioning in some other fights, I mean, this would not be the case. Ellenberger would definitely get a lot more respect, but it is 2016. It is the type of fight that's going to be dangerous right now for Ellenberger. I mean, Brown has been improving fight by fight. I mean, even his fight with Lawler, that was a war, and you got to respect that. I mean, to the current champion, that's how good Brown has kind of fought and made his way up the ladder. And of course, he does have some kryptonite still that he needs to get a little bit better. Now, his sub defense is improving. I mean, he's been able to grapple a lot better. I mean, tighten up that defense. Of course, he gets out grappled by some of the better grapplers, of course, wrestlers as well. And that's the key to victory, I think, here for Ellenberger. I mean, he always has dynamite in his hands, and Ellenberger can end it with one punch, but we haven't really seen much of that as of late. I mean, Koscheck is one thing, but I still think that Ellenberger hasn't really been able to use his outstanding power effectively in his wrestling combined to win fights, really, against opponents that are at least capable of maybe climbing that ladder or eventually getting title shots. And Brown is right there in the upper tier of welterweights for sure, and is a very dangerous opponent. So Ellenberger, if he cannot wrestle for three rounds here and repeatedly put Brown on his back and control him and stay out of submission trouble and all that, he's going to probably get caught and knocked out. I mean, it's as simple as that. So I do like Ellenberger. I have a lot of respect for him. I mean, the guy's been a great fighter. I just think that he has hit that spot in his career where he's probably on the way out. And Brown, even though Brown's the older fighter, he's worked so hard and he's gotten so much better these last couple of years that he deserves to be in this spot. And he kind of deserves to be at the price where he's at right now over Ellenberger. So this is Brown's fight to win or lose. I mean, if he lets Ellenberger lay on him for three rounds, obviously he deserves to get the loss, but I don't think he's going to do that. He's a warrior, man. And the type of fighter that even if he gets a few seconds per round to go crazy and go for that kill, he will do that. So Brown's going to be dangerous. Any chance this fight plays out on the feet and in the clinch, anytime he can be effective, he will be. And it's just not a good scenario for Ellenberger. So I am going to pick Brown to win this fight. I think he probably does knock Ellenberger out.
I'm going to keep this one short and simple. Jake Ellenberger is on a severe decline. Now, granted, he's lost five of his last six, and all five of those opponents were solid. Four of them are basically top five welterweights. So you can't give him too much flack for losing those fights, but it's more the way he's lost them, where just looked completely lost against Rory McDonald's jab, just got dominated and stifled by Robbie Lawler, and then just kind of got embarrassed by Tarek Saffiedine, and then absolutely massacred by Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. So he just has not looked good, and realistically, Matt Brown is going to tenderize him here if he gets any space on the feet. Now, Ellenberger has a big left hand, and he has some wrestling, but I don't think his wrestling is good enough to keep Matt Brown down for extended periods of time. Brown really has only been held down recently by the elite of the elite, and that is Damian Maia, who took until the end of the third round to finally get a submission against Brown because Brown's ground game and defense has gotten that much better. And Johnny Hendricks, who was just lost his title and was super motivated and didn't want to screw around with Brown on the feet, so he just took him down for three rounds. Now, Jake Ellenberger does not have that conditioning. He does not have the durability. So what I see happening here is maybe Ellenberger gets a takedown in the first round, but he is not going to be able to keep that up. And the second Matt Brown has some opening on the feet, I expect Brown to kind of pressure Ellenberger towards the fence and then just start absolutely battering him with knees, kicks, elbows, punches along the fence until Ellenberger just can't take it anymore and goes out. So I think this one is going to be very one-sided the second Matt Brown really kicks it up a notch, and I think he kicks it up a notch in a hurry. So my pick is going to be Matt Brown. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the women's strawweight division, we have Rose Namajunas, who is 6-2, taking on Carolina Kowalkiewicz, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Namajunas -270 to come back on Kowalkiewicz at +190. Right now it's -225, +185. So 5 cent drop on the dog. This is a great fight. I mean, Kowalkiewicz is really talking about improvement, man. I tell you what, outside of her UFC career, when she made her debut, she's really stepped it up and she's performed relatively well. She's getting better. She's always been solid. So it's not like, you know, outside of the UFC, she was a slouch or anything like that, but you could just really, I think she's improved so much. And again, gaining more confidence with her wins thus far. I mean, especially over Marcos. I mean, that was a very solid win, making her UFC debut in a tough fight like that. And then, of course, coming back and defeating Clark like she did. Clark is not an easy out either, even though she doesn't get a ton of respect. So coming off two solid wins for her thus far in her UFC career. And then outside of that, I mean, she's had, like I said, a pretty decent career facing tough opponents in Invicta and other leagues as well. So she's a very experienced fighter. And a really impressive fighter because she's a very complete fighter. Now, her game is actually putting a lot of pressure, moving forward. She's got speed. She's got a little bit of power. And she definitely just stays consistent, stays on the attack, and puts a lot of pressure on her opponents. And obviously, that's going to get her some wins. I mean, she has 6 of her 9 wins are, of course, by decision, and that's the kind of pace she pushes. So she's not really as much of a finisher, and especially against Namajunas here, I don't think she's going to be able to do that, but I do think she's going to make life interesting in this fight for Namajunas. And I think if it hits the scorecards, it might be a head scratcher. I mean, stylistically, she matches up well because she has decent takedown defense. So I think Namajunas is not going to be able to bully her, get her to the ground as she might like. I mean, that is going to be, I think, the determining factor in this fight a lot. If Namajunas can get Kowalkiewicz to the floor, control her, try to work her sub game, obviously she's going to be scoring points along the way. She's going to win this fight. If it stays standing, Namajunas can have some success on the feet as well. I think she has a little bit of pop in her punches and her kicks. She's a very smart fighter. So it's going to be a fun stand-up fight if it does stay standing. But I think Kowalkiewicz is the girl that pushes the pace a little bit more. She's going to be in Rose's face a little bit more, and it might sway the judges there. So it's going to be interesting for sure. I do think it's a dog or pass situation. I mean, based on the line, it's just tough to lay Rose, especially if this fight probably goes to scorecards and it is going to be a close competitive decision. It's just hard to have that kind of faith in the judges to get it right. And Kowalkiewicz is definitely going to be a tough person to score against. So I'm going to still pick, despite all that being said, I still think that Rose is getting better. I mean, she's coming off of a very impressive win in her own right over kind of a rival of hers in Torres. I don't know if it's fair to say that, but you know, I mean, she's fought her a couple times now and has a split over her. And I think that Tisha Torres has been one of the best at 115 pounds, as we all know as well. So that is a very solid win. And this is a very comparable fight because Torres brings a lot to the table like Kowalkiewicz does as well. I mean, she has good takedown defense and good striking, but I think Kowalkiewicz just pushes the pace so well that that's what's going to make this fight a tougher Namajunas, maybe even a little bit tougher. I don't know. It's tough to say, but we'll see how it plays out. It should be a fun fight either way. I'm going to slightly lean towards Rose Namajunas. I don't have a ton of confidence though, believe it or not, despite how good Rose has looked. I mean, her win again over Torres was impressive, but her win over Paige VanZant was even that much more impressive. And then of course, she defeated Hill before that, Angela Hill, and Angela Hill's getting better and better. She's no slouch either. So Namajunas has been putting together some quality wins. I mean, since that loss to Esparza, I think it kind of woke her up. It got her refocused a little bit, and she's been just going through people. So Namajunas is a hard woman to beat right now, and I think she's probably going to win this fight.
I expect this fight to be extremely competitive. If it stays standing, Kowalkiewicz is going to be in a decent shape to pull off an upset. Now, thankfully, it's mixed martial arts, and it's not all going to guaranteed be standing, because Rosen Namajunas has a extremely dynamic ground game. I mean, she showcased brutal ground and pound against Paige VanZant. She showcased incredible submissions on The Ultimate Fighter and in her win over the finish over VanZant and over Angie Overkill Hill. So I do definitely feel like if Namajunas can bring the ground game into this fight, Kowalkiewicz is going to be in some trouble. But in a pure stand-up affair, Kowalkiewicz has an extremely high volume of attack. She mixes combinations in well. She throws high. She throws low with her boxing. And she puts an incredible pace on her opponents on the feet that they just cannot keep up with. And Rose, on the other hand, has really started to refine her striking. When she first started her mixed martial arts career, you didn't really have to take her strikes that seriously because, yeah, she would wing some crazy kicks and throw some punches, but there really wasn't anything behind them. You could just take them and then wade through them and get your shots in. That's a bit of what Tisha Torres did the first time when they fought and Torres got the win. But since then, Namajunas has really been working with Trevor Whitman. She's sitting down on her punches a lot better. She throws with power now. She can do some damage, and she has a nice jab. The problem, though, is if she just works those technical skills that she's been developing against Kowalkiewicz, I think she gets overwhelmed. Kowalkiewicz just, it's tough to just keep popping a jab in your opponent's face when they are just in your grill throwing combinations to the head and body nonstop. So Namajunas absolutely needs to mix this fight up. Maybe, you know, throw on the feet enough to keep Kowalkiewicz guessing, but I think she really needs to close the distance and then, you know, grapevine some legs, work for takedowns, and then just start going to work on the canvas. Because while Kowalkiewicz has showcased pretty good takedown defense so far, I think if Namajunas can get inside on her, she can make something happen because she's just so aggressive with her submission attempts and with her ground attack. So I'm leaning Rose Namajunas, but Kowalkiewicz definitely is scary here if this fight is forced to be a stand-up affair. But my pick is going to be Rose Namajunas. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a UFC welterweight title bout between champion Robbie Lawler, who is 26-10 with one no contest, and challenger Tyron Woodley, who is 15-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Lawler, minus 280, the comeback on Woodley, plus 200. And right now, looking over at fivedimes.eu, it is currently Lawler minus 175. The comeback on Woodley is plus 155. And that line has dropped actually today even more so. It was kind of hanging in there around 2-1 or so, and it's dropped a little bit more. So there is more action coming in on Woodley overall. But the sports books are actually adjusting the line as they go as well. Now, that's one thing a lot of people, I think, don't realize at the time. I mean, once the line's put out there, of course, there's some movement. There's some crazy movement, as you guys all well know, out there early on if you're really catching a close eye on the line movement. But typically the lines, even if they skyrocket up, they tend to come back down a little bit, back down to reality. But if not, depending on leans and in which way and depending on the type of fight it is or what scenario the actual betting is, it matters. And the sports books do adjust to try to draw action back where they want it. Now, a good example of that was actually Holly Holm and Shevchenko last week. The line dropped big time, but a lot of the sports books honestly made a profit and they needed Shevchenko to win, believe it or not. With a huge line drop, a lot of people probably wouldn't think that's the case. Hopefully it's a scenario here as well. If they do their jobs right, it's going to be a spot where it's not going to be as bad as it looks. The action is coming in on Woodley, but they're going to attract action back on Lawler with the price drop as well. And they should be relatively even and probably needing Woodley still to come through on fight day, which is okay with me because this is a tough spot. I mean, it's definitely a difficult fight for both men. I mean, obviously, you got to lean a little bit more towards Lawler. He's a champion. He's been in the wars recently. He's come through. He's tough as nails. I mean, his resurgence since he made his recent stint, this second run in the UFC in his career has been remarkable. I mean, he's been putting in the work. He's been just improving his overall game. You could tell he wanted to get to the top and he made it there. And not just that. I mean, he's been really brilliant throughout his career doing so. I mean, it's especially in, like I said, in this run. So you got to really take your hat off to Robbie Lawler and what he's accomplished, but he's been in some wars. I mean, honestly, if you look at it, his fight obviously with Condit was a war. Before that, the McDonald fight was a war. His Hendricks fights were wars. Even the Matt Brown fight, that was a tough fight, man. If you look at that fight closer, I mean, that takes a lot out of you as well. So Lawler has been in these crazy firefights and tremendous, I mean, exciting fights for the fans, but that takes a toll on your body. It takes a toll on your chin, especially as many fight years and how long Lawler's been in the sport. It does concern me a little bit. So although I do think he is the better fighter here because he does have the takedown defense to keep this fight upright in most cases, and he does have the power in the feet and the ability to end anybody's night with one punch. And again, the fight IQ, and he does put his foot on the gas when he needs to. Just everything's been clicking for Lawler, and I respect that and I know that. But Woodley's a tough guy, man. I mean, Woodley's going to be pushing the pace for sure as well as far as trying to use his explosiveness and his power early on. I mean, as the fight progresses, that's the problem and issue I do have with Woodley. He does tend to fade a little bit, and he's not going to be pushing the pace or he's even stepping on the gas at all as the fight progresses. And at times, Woodley does get tentative, so I know I'm being a little hypocritical there, but I think early on, Woodley has a chance to make life interesting for Lawler and maybe miserable and maybe even possibly put him out, because Woodley has that one punch knockout power that even if you do have a solid chin, he can end your night. I mean, that's how explosive and athletic he is. Of course, we all know his wrestling background. It wouldn't surprise me if he does get a quick takedown or two along the way. I don't know if he's going to be able to hold Robbie Lawler down. Not many people recently have had that kind of success. And to be honest with you, I think that would be a terrible game plan for Woodley to implement here in this fight. I don't think he should wrestle with Lawler because I don't think this fight's going to play out five rounds. So winning rounds is not going to do him any good here. I think he needs to stand and bang with Lawler, as crazy as that sounds. I think he needs to use his, again, his athleticism, his explosiveness, his big power to try to clip Lawler early and then just pounce. He has killer instinct and he does finish the job once he has his opponent hurt more times than not. I think that's the way he wins this fight. He pulls off the upset that way. It's not going to be easy because Lawler gets rocked and he recovers fairly quickly. But another scenario I could see playing out, and if he is drilling this, and I think that it is definitely a weakness in Lawler's game, is leg kicks. I mean, Woodley has some underrated leg kicks. He's got some power. He needs to use them a little bit more frequently, but I think that would be a great tool to use here against Robbie Lawler as well, because Lawler is not the one that's going to be looking for the takedowns, as we all know. And in the past, I mean, we looked at Melvin Manoff, and I know it's Manoff. He's a beast and a striker in a whole different realm. I mean, the guy is just tremendous on the feet, but he was chewing Lawler's legs up. And not just that. I mean, if you look throughout his career, Lawler has not really taken leg kicks really well. And I think Woodley can implement some wet leg kicks early on as well, do some damage that way, and then maybe catch Lawler on the feet. So that's the way he wins this fight. But overall, Lawler does have more ways to win this because he can also knock Woodley out, as I've said. I think Lawler, if it does hit the scorecards, he is going to win three out of the five rounds at least, because Woodley is going to fade. And I'd be surprised to see Woodley survive against Lawler five rounds, to be honest with you. But if it does hit the cards, I think it is Lawler winning that fight. So unless Woodley's cardio has drastically changed and all of a sudden he comes into this fight and he can go five strong rounds, it's probably not going to end up well for him if he doesn't finish this fight. So with all that being said, it's hard to go against the man until somebody dethrones him, but I'm being cautious here for sure, and I would not lay the juice, even with the price drop right now at minus 175, minus 180. I would still stay away from Robbie Lawler in this fight. I do think it's a dog or pass situation. At the price now, it's probably smarter to stay away and see what happens, but should be a good fight. I'm expecting Lawler to win, but the way the sport's been going recently as well, we've seen a lot of upsets, and I wouldn't be shocked if it happens here again.
I definitely think this fight is going to be competitive, but I think it's only going to be competitive for about two, maybe three rounds. Now, if this was a three-round fight, I'd be betting on Woodley like crazy because he is a strong starter. He has big-time power in his hands. He can pick up takedowns early, maybe even against Lawler, who has almost impeccable takedown defense. Woodley is quick. He's athletic. He has big time power, especially with his left hook, but he can kick pretty well too. So almost the complete package, but everybody has a weakness. And with Woodley, it's always been cardio. The only time he was ever in a fight that was longer than three rounds, he got knocked out in the fourth by Nate Marquardt. in while fighting for the Strikeforce title. He was exhausted in that fight. There was a crazy high pace in that fight that he just could not keep up with. Now, Robbie Lawler has done a great job of kind of taking it easy a little bit early so that he has all the energy for those championship rounds. I mean, you watch repeatedly, time and time again, he has gone out there and maybe the fight was close, maybe he was even losing, and then he just turns it on in that fifth round, and he doesn't just win fifth rounds, he destroys fifth rounds. And against Tyron Woodley, if this fight gets to the championship rounds, Woodley is in big, big trouble because Lawler has a lot of power. He has a lot of confidence in himself, and I do not see Woodley being able to withstand the late surge from Lawler. So I can see Tyron Woodley winning the early parts of this fight, but unless he puts the champ away, I think he is going to be in huge trouble, especially if he hurts Lawler and can't finish him. Then he just basically punches himself out, and it could be over even quicker than the championship rounds. So realistically, I think Tyron Woodley has a puncher's chance in the first couple rounds, and if that doesn't happen, then I'm all aboard Robbie Lawler here. So I think Lawler survives the early attack and onslaught from Woodley, weathers that storm, and then gets a finish. So my pick is definitely going to be the champ, Robbie Lawler, to retain. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 201. Part 2 of the Premium Odds Cast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker Premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.